This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Oh, okay, I didn't hear any music, so I didn't know that we were on. So there we go. Okay, I just heard dead air. That was kind of weird, but good to be with you on this sunny, hot Saturday. It's going to be a great weekend, but of course, we need plenty to talk about here, so let's get into it at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with headlines. And so the Mariners lose again in Colorado, and you kind of knew this was, they're set up right now for not good things. I mean, no Cruz in the lineup because designated hitters not in National League parts. So Colorado wins the game 10-7. You know, they did call up Bergman from the minor leagues, and, you know, he kind of got racked up. And so Christian Bergman gets beaten. They did get the hits. But when you look at the way things are right now for the Mariners, you know, they have lost five out of the last six games, or six out of the last nine games. In the last seven games, they have been outscored 46-23. So you can see they're limping into the finish line here as far as the All-Star game, and really can't wait to get out there. They're continuing, of course, today and tomorrow. Tonight's game is going to be with, you know, James Paxton going on the disabled list for 10 days. Of course, that was happening anyways after the bad back and that. They'll go with Wade LeBlanc tonight. Then they'll go with Mike Leake tomorrow, trying to at least salvage something in this series against Colorado. But the fortunate news for them is that they got some help. The Los Angeles Dodgers ended up beating the Los Angeles Angels 3-2, so the Angels are 10 games back in the wild card race. And San Francisco scored a 7-1 victory over the Oakland A's, so they're 5 games back. So the Mariners at 58-37, 21 games over 500, just need to get to the finish line and get to the All-Star break. In other baseball news, as we mentioned, James Paxton goes on the disabled list. They made about 5 other moves, calling up 2 up pitchers, Casey Lawrence being another one from the minor leagues, and shuffling things around. Gordon Beckham goes down to the minors. So just trying to get more arms up here because you can see that they're now at the point where they're getting to stretch. They have to stretch a little bit with Marco Gonzalez. Blake Snell ended up getting into the All-Star game. Fortunately, that's good news. The local product who's down in Tampa has one of the best earned run averages in baseball. So he was able to get in. That's encouraging. And in other news, you know, nothing big in the National Football League. Although the surprising news came yesterday. Here's DeMarco Murray, running back, still looking for a job. Had 4 teams, including the Seahawks, talking to him way back in March. He ends up announcing his retirement on ESPN yesterday. And where it was a surprise, he did a podcast with Adam Schefter and didn't even hardly mention the idea that he was thinking about retiring. But come Friday, he announces his retirement. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are we doing? A nice Saturday morning, my friend. We doing all right?
Doing well, doing well.
Oh, the sun's out. It's a good thing. You were just talking about DeMarco Murray retiring after 7 seasons in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I know it's tough on a running back because when he gets up to a certain age and such a large crop, vast crop of running backs coming out of the college ranks right now.
Right.
Now, if you were DeMarco Murray, could you put your ego aside and just go on a team and become into a platoon of running backs?
Well, I think it still comes down to money, you know, because you can kind of figure with 4 teams talking to him, all 4 teams were talking for the $790,000 minimum, probably with a minimum benefits package that, you know, we have the cap at $630,000. And, you know, if you're not interested in doing that, if you don't want to put your body into motion, because, you know, once you start to get into that minimum salary range, sure, it's a prove it type of deal, but usually it's hard to get out of that pattern. And so I think that you look and you say, okay, maybe my market isn't there and maybe it's time to move on. Now, you still wonder, is he playing a little bit of a game? Because you notice, I mean, he did this for the maximum publicity. He did the podcast. He did the NFL Live yesterday. And I think that maybe what he's saying, hey, I'm retiring, but then wink, wink, if I get the right offer, I might come back. So I don't know if he's going to put in his retirement papers. All we know is that he came and announced his retirement.
You know, because, you know, I find him to be a very productive running back. You know, and I think he's a 3-down type running mm-hmm. back. It just, you know, it sometimes when you recognize, I think he's 29 right now, right?
That's correct.
Coming
yes.
up on 30.
Yeah.
Okay, now when you start to get into that area of in the NFL, you know how they look at a running back at that age right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's particularly with all, you know, I just think that he would have to just understand that if he were to, like maybe early on in the market, when the market might have given him a little bit more than $700,000, he should have just taken that, in my opinion, and just went in and be in a platoon, thus saving your body to maybe last a little longer and prolonging your career.
Right. No, that's true. You know? And see, what I think what you look at and what teams are looking at now, and of course, just like in baseball, just like in basketball, everybody's doing advanced stats and sabermetrics and all kind of different scouting, analytical scouting. And so if you get to the stage where Murray is, you know that you're not going to get a long-term deal. Everything's going to be one-year prove-it type of deals, and so maybe you don't want to go through that. And the idea would be, you know, if you would end up giving, let's say, a three-year deal to Murray, even if it's only like $3 million, you know, a year, that he might, you know, you may not make it to the third year. And so that you're at that stage where now all of a sudden you're kind of put over in the corner and saying, okay, well, you're kind of yesterday's news, but we'll give you a little bit. And if they say no, they say no.
Yeah, you know, is Darrell Revis calling it quits too, Mr. Clayton?
You'd have to think so, yeah, because, I mean, you haven't even heard him make a visit. I know he tweeted out something not football-related, but just related to, you know, just being out there. But, no, he's right now probably out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, he's another guy. He worked under them one-year contracts also, and coming at, he's coming around that tender age, about 34, 35 years old, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah. I mean, he lost that 1 year with the Jets. He lost all his speed. I mean, it was remarkable to see the drop in his speed because, you know, again, Hall of Fame caliber cornerback, and probably will make the Hall of Fame, but he couldn't cover anybody deep. I mean, in fact, that's what teams started doing to him. They just sent guys deep on him in man coverage, and he just couldn't last.
No, he couldn't make it happen. You know, another thing you look at, too, let's go right back quick to the running backs. You look at Le'Veon Bell. He's looking for that big-time contract from the Steelers, you know. And didn't he have 415 touches of the football last year?
That's correct, over 400. Caught 85 passes.
Wow.
I mean, he was one of the – I mean, he – because I know some backs like Ezekiel Elliott got a little over 20 carries a game, but he only had a 10-game season. But Le'Veon had 321 carries and 85 catches.
That's a lot of work for a running back as far as that. Would you invest that kind of money that he's looking for into him?
I would not. I don't think it's justified. In fact, I think the offer that he probably has on the table right now is the one that he should take. You know, I know a year ago the Steelers offered $13 million a year, and they structured the deal so that he would make more money in the first 2 years than he would as a franchise player. Now, he wanted 17 to 18 because his point was, hey, I'll catch the football like a wide receiver, so I should be paid like a wide receiver. Well, it's like, okay, why don't you change your body type and go on the outside and not run the ball? Then you can be a wide receiver. I mean, he's a great back. There's no question about it. But the advice either he's not taking is really screwing up because, you know, if he hits the open market, I was looking over at SportTrack this morning, and I think this is pretty fair. Now, if the average he would probably get would be about $11.2 million just on the open market. But because, again, the highest paid running back is $8.2 million, and it's not $14.5 million like he's making now as a franchise player. You know, with the Steelers offering $13 million, I think that's more than generous.
He's definitely generous right now, especially in like I said, with the way that the situation goes with the kids coming out of college like that. I mean, you can be replaced right quick, and they don't even blink an eye or think about you like that. And, you know, and Le'Veon Bell is an intricate part of their offense and what they do and how they operate. You know, and I'm very interested to see, since they got rid of their old offensive coordinator and they brought in another guy. Do you think that offense is going to increase or decrease?
I think it can increase because I still think it underachieved last year and really has underachieved the last 2 years. I think the one thing that now will happen that didn't happen with Todd Haley is that Ben Roethlisberger is going to have more freedom to adjust plays. You know, he could not call an audible in the red zone. Like, for example, if he's at the 1 yard line, and that, of course, angered him, you know, he wanted to, you know, call off a pass play and go to a run play. He wasn't allowed to do it.
Yeah, wow. Well, you know, speaking of that, right now, I'm looking at Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald. Are they $20 million players?
I think so. Because, you know, you're looking at, because, you know, the numbers go up each year. right? About $1 million or $2 million. Of course, you got Von Miller at 19, and Ndamukong Suh was let go from a $19+ million contract, and he ended up getting, you know, 14 on the open market. But of course, he's 31 years old. So what I look at is that you know, probably if it's just a hair under 20, but somebody, one of those two have to get 20, I think. Donald's the best defensive player in the league right now. He's surpassed J.J. Watt, any of the other players. I mean, he's, I think, the best. I mean, you can't block him in, it's funny, I was talking to one of the retired players who just retired this year, and it's like he gave up like four sacks, five sacks, and, you know, and two of them were to Aaron Donald in his last year.
I agree with you. Now, you know, I look at the Rams, mm-hmm. and the Rams, let's use the NBA equation. You can't really build a super team in the NFL, in my opinion, because of the physicality of the game and the injuries of the game. Now, I'm looking at the Rams. This could just be a one-year team. I mean, are you going to be able to pay Aaron Donald? Are you going to be able to pay Sue, Marcus Peters?
Mm-hmm.
You got a lot of contracts coming up there. Brockers, I think, is coming up.
No, in fact, I was just working on that. You know, now they've got plenty of cap room next year because they got about $65 million. But listen to the guys that are starting to come up. Now, again, they have the fifth-year option on Marcus Peters and the fifth-year option on Brandon Cooks. But mm-hmm. you got LaMarcus Joyner, who has to decide by Monday if he can get a long-term deal. Ndamukong Suh's up. You've got Todd Gurley coming around the corner. You've got Aaron Donald, who's up after this year. And then their second and third round pick, they're Jamon Brown and Rob Haverstein. They're out there, so they're up. And then their right guard, Roger Safford's up. So really, they've got two older guys on the offensive line, Andrew Whitworth and John Sullivan. Sullivan being the center and Whitworth being the left tackle. Great acquisitions, but no, something has to break up because these contracts just don't all fit in.
No, that's why I'm looking at this team. Would you agree that this is just a one-year team?
No, I think they've got it. They've got enough youth that they can sustain it. And, you know, believe me, Kevin Demoff, who is their president, is real good with the cap. So I'm sure they figured some of it out. But, you know, they're not – let's put it this way. They're not going to fall apart, but they're not going to be this is the best team they're going to have, period.
Yeah, right now. That's what I'm looking at right now. I think this year is going to be – It's like for now.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to do it now. You know, they're not going to fall apart. They got a lot of youth on that team. They got a lot of young guys on that team. But I'm looking at what they brought in. Can they sustain that next year with a lot of these guys coming up? Because even though you could get Peters on that fifth-year option and Brandon Cook on that fifth-year option, that's still going to be top five money within their position, right?
Right.
So that's going to be against your cap as far as that one-year deal
mm-hmm.
with those two players. So, and then Ndamukong Suh, is that just a one-stop shop for him?
I think so, yeah, because particularly if you're going to be paying $20 million to Aaron Donald, you can't come back and, you know, even go over 10 for Ndamukong Suh. So they just have to do it. But, you know, it's no different than what Seattle went through. You know, they go through and they peak up in 2013 and 2014, but they weren't able to keep Brandon Browner because they know he was going to get a payday. They weren't able to keep Bruce Irvin. You know, he had to move on. And so that's just a reality. There's only so many contracts that are big that can fit in there. And, you know, of course, the smart thing that the Rams are doing, they're making this move while they're entering the third year of Jared Goff's contract. So, you know, once his deal starts to get to the fifth year and he's making over $20 million a year, things tighten up.
Yeah, it definitely does. If you look at the AFC, at the NFC West right now, how do you look at it shaping up right now?
Rams number one, Seattle number two, San Francisco number three, Arizona with probably six wins number four.
Yeah, you know, because I was looking at the Arizona Cardinals. They lost a bunch of key players on the defensive side of the ball. Well, of course, they have some young players that I like that's going to come in and make up that. But on the offensive side of the ball, would you put Sam Bradford as your starting quarterback?
Yes. You paying him $20 million. If you want him as your starting quarterback, you make him the starting quarterback. You know, you see how deep you can get into the season, and then if they do go 6-10, then you get to the middle or so, or maybe October, November, maybe more November, and then you put Josh Rosen in. Hey, JB, got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, next Saturday.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Oh, good. Good, John. Hey, a shout-out to Gene Segura. It's great to see him make it into the All-Star game, John. It was great to see that by all the Seattle fans voting for him and in favor of him. And he's just such an asset, John.
Oh, no question. No, that was a great one. So, and it was great to see the fans respond the way that they did, and really the way the players and the organization did. I mean, the fact Felix Hernandez, here he is with a sore back, and he's in the middle of the street right down by Safeco trying to get people to come in and cast a vote, and players were giving away shoes and bats and everything, and then they had the Gene Fest. No, that was great, and that gives four Mariners at the All-Star game, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, last week, John, we discussed the ongoing fiasco with Terrell Owens and what he's doing with the Hall, and it was good to see that Joe Horgan and the Hall decided to just ignore or not acknowledge Owens' merits at the induction ceremony, and I say good for the Hall, and again, shame on Owens once more. Just, you know,
I agree with that, and I'm proud of the way that they did handle it, because it's not like they're not giving him the bust. I mean, he has the bust that's going to be there in Canton, which of course he's never going to be able to see because he's not going then,
right?
They're mailing, I like this little touch, they're mailing the jacket the same day as the induction ceremony, so he's there in Tennessee Chattanooga, but he doesn't get to wear the jacket. It's going to be in the mail.
Yeah, good for the Hall. I agree. They handled it just right. Now, are they going to be? Is there any broadcast network that's picked up that for
Owens?
I hope they
ignore it.
Yeah, me too.
Because it's
bad. It reminds me, John, back in the early '70s. There was Marlon Brando being nominated for The Godfather, and then I guess right around that time there was George C. Scott being nominated for Patton, and they both won. And I think George C. Scott handled it better.
Mm-hmm.
He just declined to show up because he didn't believe in award ceremony, which is fine. That's his prerogative. And he left it at that. But, Marlon Brando made a whole political show of it.
Right.
With how he felt about the Native American experience here in America, that's his political opinion. That's fine. But I don't think that's the proper forum. And I think that, Owens is really doing something similar. He kind of wants to showcase his own bravado. And it's not healthy, John.
No, I agree. I think that, I think it's going to take him time to realize the mistake that he made. But, because he's mad at us voters because we didn't vote him in as a first ballot. I feel very good about that. I don't take back the fact that he should be in the Hall. I voted for him the last 2 years. And, now he's showing why people were against him in the first year and the second year. But he's in. But the problem is he's in, but he's out. Because
now
he's not being acknowledged for the success that he's had by being there in Canton and celebrating with everybody else.
Indeed, indeed. Now, John, earlier this week they had the supplemental draft for the NFL, and I wasn't here when they. Seattle fans know about this pretty well, I think, because of Brian Bosworth was taken in the supplemental draft. I wasn't here at that time, but it was my understanding that the Raiders had the number one pick, but they decided to not take the number one pick. And I also understand that the Giants picked up the third or fifth rounder.
Yeah, they had the third pick in each of the rounds. And so the Giants took Sam Beal in the third round, and sixth round Adonis Alexander went to Washington. But see, here you can understand this, because remember, John Gruden's your coach right now, Raider Jim. What is he not like? Playing rookies.
Right.
So it's like, okay, so now, and remember, how many times has John Gruden on the air or as a coach complained about not having enough time to prepare the players? And so he's not even going to have any of those two guys for the OTAs, the mini camp. He just has to bring them through to camp. So that means he's had 15 days to prepare, and less practices in 15 days. 15 days to prepare the player for the preseason. So I don't think he thought it was worth it.
Right. And I also see that the Raiders announced their camp schedule, and usually there's a 2-day period between when the rookies report and the veterans report, and this time it's just 1 day.
Yeah,
I noticed that. And these little subtleties, and I know you're big on the scheduling stuff and what that means, but I think that Gruden's trying to get as much as he can out of the players when he has them in camp to coach them up. Now, explain something to me, John, because I don't really understand this. If the Giants and the Redskins took those two players in the supplemental draft. Does that forecast forward for what they don't have in the draft next year?
Yeah, they just basically that means there's going to be 254 players, not 256 players drafted, and the Giants give up their third round pick and the sixth round pick of the Redskins goes.
I see.
Very simple.
So if the Raiders hypothetically, because they had the number one pick, would have chosen that, they'd have been out a number one pick.
Talking the number one pick, they had the number one pick in each round for seven rounds.
Okay.
So example, if they would have taken Sam Beal, they would lose their third round pick.
Right. Okay. Got it.
But they get the player and they get him a year early. Hey, Raider Jim, thank you for the phone call.
Okay, John, take care.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Brandon in Kenmore. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Just watering the lawn and feeding the cat.
Nice.
I wanted to talk to you about Brandon Browner.
Mm-hmm.
So, personal story with him. I played briefly in college, and I had worked out with him in the BMAC. Not the VMAC, excuse me, the Dempsey. Back in 2011, 2012, he was very, very nice guy, kind of took me under his wing. Met him again at SeaTac in 2013 and was absolutely shocked when I heard. He kind of had, once he got out of football, or at least the NFL, I believe 2016, had, what was it, like three arrests?
Right.
And I wanted to just kind of get your take on everything.
See, because I'm like you, I've always liked him. In fact, I feel bad in one way because about a week, you know, when Cam Chancellor made his announcement that he's not going to play football this year,
okay,
Brandon, he instant messages me. So again, I didn't even know because I usually don't check instant messages just because I usually don't get many. I get a couple, and so he did that, and so I didn't see it. And what he was trying to do is have me go on his podcast, and I feel guilty for not responding and not knowing, because really it was like the day that this happened is when I looked at the instant message, and there's Brandon Browner, and so I feel bad about that.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it, you know, his identity and just things are tied to playing football and being a football player, because he always, you know, and I had briefly met his wife and kids when they were at SeaTac. He was very, you know, very nice, very accommodating, and, you know, very down-to-earth and humble, and he obviously, you know, everyone knows his story. He kind of grinded his way up through the CFL early on, and what do you suppose this is the end for him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been out for more than a year, so it's going to be hard for him to get back, and particularly at his age. So, yeah, this is it for him.
Well,
I mean,
even beyond football.
Right now, I mean, he's facing the possibility of life in prison.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, he's fighting for, his entire existence right now.
Sure.
So, I hope that he didn't do it. We'll have to see how the case goes. But, hey, I mean, domestic violence is horrible, and if something happens bad, I mean, you should get punished as much as you can. So I feel bad for him because I like him just like you do, and I know him, but, whatever it is in the relationship or what's happened is bad. Hey, thank you for the call, Brandon.
Thank you, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We'll come back, talk some Seahawks with Michael Sean Duggar. Coming up next, it's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And pleased to be joined by Michael Sean Duggar of The Athletic and kicking around right and waiting for the start of training camp. And so have you taken any time off, Michael?
Yeah, I took a little bit. I was went down to Portland for a weekend, went to Vegas last week. I got my birthday coming up in a couple days. So, yeah, I'm enjoying myself a little bit.
Well, of course, again, it's going to get pretty busy coming up the 26th, but before that, have to see the contract negotiation game has to be played. And so how do you think this is going to start to sort out right now? How would you anticipate their pecking order of getting guys done, and will they get guys done?
Do you mean the guys who are all like
free agents after the season?
Like entering the last year of their deal?
Yep, you know, the Dwayne Browns, the KJ Wrights, the Frank Clarks, Justin Clark, Tyler Lockett.
Oh, this is fun. Okay, so let's see. Tyler, end of the year, depending on how his year goes, maybe like December. Dwayne, August. Who else? Frank August.
Justin Coleman.
One. I missed another. Oh, KJ. KJ. Ooh, end of the year. I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough. They might wait and see. I would guess they wait and see how Shaquem.
Right.
Looks, but maybe they'll, I don't know, reward him not holding out. I don't know if that's really worth doing, but that's my guess. My guess is end of the year there.
Are you comfortable with what the possible prices are going to be? Like, for example, I think it's pretty clear what the price of Frank Clark's going to be. Around $14.4 million. Danielle Hunter, who came from the same draft, he was a third rounder, and Clark was a second rounder. I mean, he just got a deal 5 years at $14.4 a year. And, during his first 3 years, Hunter's had 25.5 sacks with 12.5 in the 2016 season. That's a Pro Bowl caliber year. Clark's had 22, including 19 in the last two. I mean, I think that's the perfect comparable, whether the Seahawks like that price or not. But I think that, he's right. If he's asking in the 14.4 range.
Yeah, I think what the Seahawks have to consider is if you don't pay Frank now and you try to wait that one out, like let's say you try to wait out until like a free agent next year, then you're getting in a bidding war that you know you're going to lose. You just know, because if Frank just has, like, he just ran through his numbers, and those are numbers without being a full-time starter. I don't think he's a full-time starter in any of those years. I know last year after Cliff went down, he started 12 games.
Yeah,
so effectively a full-time starter last year. But now you're looking at, all right, Frank's probably the best pass rusher on the team. Right? So you don't want to get outbid next year. And then if you so basically you're saying, okay, we're probably going to have to let Frank walk. It'll be too expensive. And then you just let pass rushers walk out the door here. And Pete loves his pass rushers, right? And you already tried to go get one in the draft of 2017 in Malik, and that didn't pan out. Maybe you have something special in Rasheem, and you can get, guys like Marcus Smith and a few other guys on the cheap. But in this league, it looks like you're going to have one expensive pass rusher. And if anybody's going to be your one expensive pass rusher, you would think it'd be a talent like Frank Clark, right?
I would think so, yeah. And particularly, he's young. Is he, 25? I mean, that's the right age. I mean, you give him a four-year deal. I mean, you can maybe make the argument. It's like, okay, Frank, Hunter ended up getting more than you so because he's had a little bit better. And you look at his ratings, Pro Football Focus and others, it's slightly a bit higher. So it's like, just take $400,000 less and you get your money. And it's not – and again, what you're doing, you're basically swapping out Richard Sherman's contract because he was making 14 a year.
Yeah, and the thing is, if for someone like Frank, how high he was drafted, you look at the people that's remaining from their draft classes, right? They need to lock up some of these guys. I know they locked up Justin, but they lost Paul Richardson, and the 2013 draft was a mess. And at this point, the 2015 draft, you need to get at least one or two of those guys locked up. Who knows how many of those guys they would lock up from the 2016 drafts, my first guess would be not many. You got to start drafting and locking up guys. You can't just keep hoping to find guys off the cheap and year after year after year. Eventually, you're going to have to pay some guys. I would think Frank is a guy they know is going to probably have a really good year. I mean, the same thing with KJ and Tyler and Dwayne. As well, but I think if I had to guess, yeah, I'd go Frank August, Dwayne August, KJ's maybe, but I'd lean towards end of the year. Tyler, I'd do the same thing. Who else is in there? Earl? I don't think Earl's.
No, yes. We'll get into that one here in a little bit on the Earl front, but yeah, what about Justin Coleman?
Oh, Justin Coleman's an interesting one. He feels like an end of the year guy. What do you think on that? I'm not sure. He feels like an end of
the
year guy.
Well, I think better strategy, I think, is to lock up the ones that are easier to lock up. And so, like, in the pecking order, so if Frank Clark's going to be, I think he's the most important guy. I think, you know, KJ is important because, much like Thomas Davis, I know he's, 29 now, but I think that, because of the way that he plays, they can probably, get him done at about 11 or 10.5. What you probably want to do is have him come in a little under Bobby Wagner. So probably a 10.5 or so. But you're right. Maybe it's better to wait. But, Justin Coleman's going to probably be between 4 and 5. Because he's a good slot corner, and they can probably get that done. And Tyler Lockett probably in that 6 to 7 range.
Oh, 6 to 7. I'll be interested to see what Tyler commands, because I know he's when you say things out loud, like, I don't do this for the money, right? That's what Tyler just said. I think that was the end of minicamp. You don't want to say things like that out loud entering a contract here. That's how you get lowballed quick, right? It was like, oh, okay, Tyler, you're not in this. For the money, right? Just love of the game. We'll take a love of the game contract.
Right.
Remember when I take a love of the game contract, especially not a game like football, where you're just running into guys, all day. And like, no. You need to get what you're worth, right? So I think it'd be interesting on Tyler there.
Here's an interesting one to think about on this. How about this idea? Now, of course, he can take the tack like Paul Richardson. It's like, hey, I'm going to play this thing out, and maybe I hit big, and he had a good season last year as a starter, with Lockett being 75% in his words. And so, he hits $8 million, but then here's the gamble that Lockett has that Paul Richardson doesn't have. So much of Lockett's value is his return game. What if kickoffs are wiped out next year? He loses his value. Because, again, he's one of the best in the league, and if he can't get the kickoff returns, it's going to lower what he's going to get.
Yeah, that's the tough part. I don't know if he's considered that. It doesn't sound like he's, thought too much about that. It seems like he's thinking about, all right, my job is to go back there right now and return kicks, which is fine. But then again, even if, if you're thinking about, re-upping with the Seahawks, right, well, they just went and got Rashad Penny, and maybe they're hoping, okay, he can return kicks too, and we can probably get him, on the cheap, whereas we'll probably have to pay you going forward, right? So, I mean, Tyler still does punt returns, so he still has some value there, but you're right. Going forward, what if a couple of years, maybe even as early as next year, there is no kickoffs, right? So then what does Tyler command, right? So it's the gamble on himself. I mean, he can do that. I respect guys who are willing to gamble on themselves, right? That's a respectable thing to do. But it's also risky, especially in a game like football. And when every year, you're seeing teammates or a player across the league, just one play just kind of ends everything or changes everything for him. It's a dangerous game to play. I'd be interested to see if Tyler does that. I don't know if I would want to do that. But, yeah, that is an option.
And plus, he did have the scare that, he was 75%, and he's coming off a very serious injury. But I don't know. I guess in the big picture, as much as, one, you have to worry, it's like, yeah, I have suffered an injury that I have to kind of worry. Maybe it's better to get the financial stability and get something done. But then on the flip side, it's like, okay, now wait a second. Paul Richardson's making 8, and before the injury, Lockett was ahead of Richardson.
Yeah, and but at the same time, yeah, it just depends on how you look at that injury, because some people may be like, hey, I broke my leg at work. Pay me, Earl, it seems like he's looking at what happened. First, he's looking at what happened to Eric Berry, got paid, right? But at the same time, he's not ignoring what happened to, Sherman. Didn't get paid because he got hurt. Cam got paid and thankfully had injury guarantees in there, so when he got hurt, he still gets his money, right? Like, a lot of guys are looking around like, okay, I know one play can end this. I need to get paid, and I need to get paid now. It's like that, I think it's a J.G. Wentworth commercial. Like, you need your money, you need it now. Tyler's already said out loud, not in it for the money. So if I'm Seattle, I'm saying, okay, well, we can wait on that. Plus, he was injured last year, so let's see how he looks, and let's get a better gauge for his worth. So that's what kind of factors into me saying that they wait on Tyler.
Yeah. Now let's get into Earl Thomas. The one thing I have kept saying, they can't offer him any kind of a contract until he reports and they spend a little time to see if he really wants to be with this team or not. Well, I think he may have sealed his fate a little bit when he tweeted out to somebody that was tweeting to him, and he responded by saying about asking about, still want to go to the Cowboys, and he said, sure thing. And so does that kind of tell you that this is not going to end up very positive for Earl, or is it going to be very negative for the Seahawks?
I mean, I think it ends up positive for Earl at some point because somebody's going to pay him.
Yeah.
Because right? at the end of the day, he's still pretty good, but only just turned 29, I want to say. Like, he's still really, really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody will pay him, and it seems like Earl does want to be here, yes, but he also wants to be paid. You know, like, he's made it clear, just like Tyler made the opposite clear. No, I am here for the money. I do want to get paid. I've been balling out. Pay me. If you don't, someone else is going to pay me. So in that regard, I think this is great for Earl at some point. You know, he stays healthy, gets the check that he wants. For Seattle, it doesn't look like it'll end great. You know, I'm not a fan of NFL trades in general because it feels, when you're the team giving up the player, it just feels like you're betting on the unknown with the picks you get back. And I don't know if at this point the Seahawks are going to get a package of picks that's going to make people feel comfortable about just getting rid of Earl Thomas, especially after in a year where they're just all the star players that they know on this team are dropping like flies anyway. If you come back with, you know, a third and a fourth, maybe if you even get that for Earl Thomas, people aren't going to feel great about that. And it doesn't feel like Earl's going to budge on his holdout. Although I do think if anyone's going to budge, it's going to be Earl. I guess he's more likely to, but I just don't think that he will, at least not at this point. Yeah, it looks like it doesn't end that well for Seattle. Maybe they can cut him into, you know, a little agreement. Hey, show up. We'll get something done. But yeah, for now, it doesn't look great from Seattle's perspective, but it does look great for Earl. So depending on how you look at it,
I mean, but here's the problem that Earl faces. You know, the holdout is a one-way street to disaster for him in the sense that all he's going to do is lose money. $40,000 a day. You know, the longer it goes, then they can come back and maybe claim some of his signing bonus proration. You know, so that's the bad part that he faces. And, you know, in the end, they still control things because they have his contract. Yes, it's a distraction, but in the end, you know, they can have him be on the roster. And obviously, he's going to be on the roster. He'll come back and have to play. But then, you know, then you're going to get a third round compensatory pick if he goes someplace after the season. So, you know, that part of the business aspect and the personnel aspect have to be in the conversation.
And I feel like that was explained to Earl, or at least Earl knows that, right? I know he's I would assume that he is aware that, hey, man, you hold out in the training camp. I know you're trying to get some more money. You're going to start losing money if you don't show up to work. Are you prepared to do that? I'm pretty confident that conversation happened at some point, or he was aware of the consequences. And to go through with it, at least just a little bit I've gathered about Earl the time I've been on the job, it's like he's willing to do that. If anything, if it's just nothing else but principle. Like, hey, it's the principle of, you know, of the matter. Like, is the principle going to be enough to keep him away, get those, all right, yep, day one, you done lost this much. Day two, you're at this much. All right, day eight, I know you're working out a lot, but we've lost this much. What do you want to do? That's why I think if anyone's going to cave, it would be Earl. And if you look at it from that way, like from the Seahawks fan perspective, right, look at it that way. Think about Earl watching the money just tick away with each day. Perhaps that's enough to get him to cave. Maybe it's not one or two days in, but it's like a week or two, and it's just like, okay, my principles ain't the same as the Seahawks principles, so this isn't going to get me what I need to get.
That's
so
true.
So maybe that ends the holdout. I mean, if you look at it that way, that there's actually a good chance of that, now that I kind of verbalized that. It feels like there's a strong possibility he caves for that reason, just, you know, seeing his pocketbook get empty.
That's always a good determining factor. Hey, so what do you have on The Athletic this week?
We're breaking down the 12 most important Seahawks entering the 2018 season. It's always fun to do lists, right? People yell at you when you do lists. People disagree. People agree. It's always fun. Breaking them down into three parts for each. No. I forget how many parts that is. Three guys each part. So that's four parts. Oof, math is hard. It's early. So I think we did 12 through 10 Thursday, and I'm going to run, that'd be 9 through 7. Yeah, we're going to run 9 through 7 and 6 through 4, I think, next week at some point. Also on The Athletic, not just me, though. We have a really, really big project as a staff kicking off Monday morning. And it's going to be excellent. We got a lot of big things coming this next week. I'm super excited about it.
Well, that's great. Hey, well, thank you. And, of course, you stand and give us the podcast so everybody can listen to that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, John. You reminded me of the podcast. I'm reminding me to text Chris, too. We got the Seahawks Man to Man podcast. You can always find it on my Twitter, at Mike Dugart. It's always at the top of my page, vsporto.com. Also, we're on iTunes for my podcast family on iTunes. Always on there as well. Seahawks Man to Man.
Okay, that's great. Hey, Michael Sean, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right, thanks, John.
Michael Sean Duggar. Now, get back to the phones at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And let's go to David in South Prairie. David, thanks for being patient.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Real good. How are you?
It's great out here by the mountain.
I can imagine.
Yep. I think we really need to put this Earl Thomas thing to bed and just stop talking about it. I think one thing to Seattle, I was listening to Brock and Salk yesterday. One guy saying we need to trade him. One guy says we need to sign him. First of all, why would you want to sign a guy that does not want to be here? Second of all, nobody wants him. I just don't see a market for Earl Thomas right now. Nobody's going to give up a two. Salk saying, well, the Cleveland two or Dallas three. Nobody's going to give anything for him. If they would have, they would have done it already. Even Dallas, I mean, John Schneider needs to go to Earl Thomas and says, hey, you said come and get you. They didn't come and get you. We couldn't even get a two or three for probably the best free safety in football. You know, I think Seattle should just do nothing. Let him sit out. If he does come back, he's going to play hard. He's got pride, and he's also going to be auditioning for the rest of the league. He's not going to take it like Salk says. He's going to pull the, you know, the veteran hammy or something. No, he's going to play hard. Let him play out the season. And we get a third-round compensatory pick instead of maybe a fourth or fifth pick from Dallas.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, no, I think that you got a good rationale. That's why I keep saying that you'd like to be able to get as much value as you can, but you realize you can't. And you know that the Cowboys are sitting coy because this is the one team he probably would go to and not immediately demand a big pay raise because he can realize, okay, factor it into how you want to get this all fixed, and we'll get this all fixed up. So I kind of – it's interesting on that strategy. But in the end, you just got to try to hold on to him as long as you can. But if he's the one that wants to take the money loss, I mean, you can maybe recoup a little bit. But in the end, it's sad. You want to keep the player, but you're probably not going to be able to keep the player.
Well, yeah, and he doesn't want to be here. And it just – and I think another thing, it sends a message to the rest of the team. Even all these young guys you got in, here's a Hall of Fame player. He's probably going to be probably a Hall of Fame player. He's probably the best player in his position, and he's not getting what he wants. And we will not be held hostage by a player. You know, this I think it sends a good message. You know what this reminds me of? Remember back in the days when they just built Safeco Field, Ken Griffey Jr. wanted out. But he would only be traded to Cincinnati. And since he was a 10-5 guy, the Mariners had their hands tied, and they basically traded him to Cincinnati for next to nothing. You know, probably one of the best players in the league. Mm-hmm. And I think with Earl Thomas, like I said, there's just not a market for Earl Thomas. You know, there's no teams pounding on the door. If there was, he'd have been traded by now. But obviously, Dallas is just going to sit there and go, why should we give up something, a second or third round, or even a fourth round? Or we'll just wait till Seattle gets tired of him and wants to dump him. Mm-hmm. We're not bidding against anybody.
Nope, you make a great point. Hey, David, thank you for the phone call.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Tara, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. You enjoy the sun today?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I'm going to training camp on August 2nd. What are some of the things I should be looking for?
Well, the big thing is, just get a good spot on the grass so you can kind of watch and enjoy, see if you can get over to some of the vending places and enjoy that. But I think the big thing is that when you get there, you'll be able to, watch the way they practice, which I think you'll like. Certainly, you want to watch the running backs. You want to watch Rashard Penny, and you want to watch Chris Carson. Definitely, what you'll enjoy is watching Russell Wilson running around around and taking control. You'll also like to watch, you know, how some of the veteran leaders on defense are taking control of things. You know, guys like Bobby Wagner and Bradley McDougal and KJ Wright, you know, how they're pointing out different things. You'll also want to try to look at some of the speed receivers, you know, Grayson and Johnson and guys like that. But the big thing is, you know, make sure you have a roster handy so you can take a look and see and say, ooh, that guy looks good. Who is he? And so get to know the players by the numbers, and you'll have a great time.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch them. I think the biggest step for Russell Wilson is taking more control of the game, especially under a new offensive coordinator, just managing the line better and noticing the coverages better.
Yeah, and just get him to have better protection. But I think you can see a significant improvement from last year, the way things are being blocked. And you can see, you know, the running game starting to step up, or last year it just stepped on its own foot. So that's great. Hey, Tara, thank you for the phone call.
You're welcome.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.